are listening to the Intentional Talk Radio Network. It is a Tuesday, and folks, we're getting ready for Change Matters right here on IPRNradio.com. Come on back at the top of the hour. You've got about 2 minutes to get ready. So go get ready. Get your nice hot drink, cold drink, anything that you desire. Get it ready and come on back and get ready for the show. We've got a great guest this afternoon. His name is Eric Parks, and you don't want to miss it. So we'll see you in 90 seconds. Come on back at the top of the hour, folks. It is a Tuesday. It is time for Change Matters. And thank you very much. Our engineer gets us ready with all of that good music. That is African sound. We love that. You got to give it to the engineer. She is right on. So, folks, how are you doing this afternoon? It is a Tuesday, and yes, it is time for Change Matters. And you know how we do it right here. This is where we talk to you, for you, with you, and about you. And it is all good, all the time. This is where you can get your news and views that you can use. We're going to make sure that you get all the information that you can use, all the information that you need to go about your day in the right way. So stick and stay. Don't go away, as Kenny Hendricks says. This is going to be a great show. So we're going to start with just some things that are going on in the news. And I've got to say, one of the things that I am very upset about is Lincoln College, Lincoln University, is closing its doors as of Friday. This can't happen. This cannot happen. There have been at least three HBCUs, three or four HBCUs that have closed. What? That's unacceptable. That is unacceptable. They're closing because of COVID. They've had dire issues with COVID, and they're closing because of funding. They had a cyber attack. They had a wave of COVID. Students didn't go to school. Just all sorts of things. How is it we are letting Lincoln close? The university has been around for 157 years. Okay, we've got to stop this. USC ain't in trouble. Cal State LA ain't in trouble. Southwestern ain't in trouble. But Lincoln University, that is an HBCU, is in trouble. How does that happen? SMU isn't in trouble. University of Houston is not in trouble, but Lincoln University is. And we're allowing it to happen. We're allowing it. So what are we going to do to stop this from happening? We talk about taking control of the narrative. This is a narrative that we need to take control of. If Lincoln University closes, that's our fault. That's our fault. Because we send kids to other universities, which means their money goes to that university. Why not the universities that represent us, that have been around for 157 years? This is a travesty. This is a travesty. When I read the article, most of the article, I called Teresa Price, who has the Black College Expo in Los Angeles, and she visits every college in the country, Black colleges. It's time for this to stop. Black News Channel, they closed. They closed about 3 weeks ago, the Black News Channel. And now we have a university that's closing. What are we not doing? What are we not doing? And my answer is there's a whole lot we're not doing. And I need to know why. Why? We support football, basketball, every sport that you can think of. We support it. They don't support us. But our boys are running out there playing basketball, doing whatever they need to do. Are they supporting Black colleges? No, because if they were, Lincoln wouldn't be closing. So what are we not doing? And my answer, there's a whole lot that we're not doing. And we need to do more. It is a travesty that college is closing. And the message that I got was, where is Beyonce, Oprah, Jay-Z, Michael Jordan, and a host of so-called rich people who are in the limelight? They want you to support them. Where are they? Come on. And the school needs $50 million to stay afloat. And you mean to tell me those people can't put together a couple of million dollars a piece and keep the school open? Come on. Come on. Come on. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. I don't like that at all. And I will come up with a way to contact all of those, send them an email and let them know. You guys have let too many things go. This is not the chain link that we need in this community. This is not the chain link that we need. Why would a Black college close? It's 22. Come on. Why is it closing? Because it's not supported by the people that it supports. That's why. It's a travesty. The Jewish colleges don't close. You won't see West Point closing. You won't see any other college closing. Okay? So come on, people. How is it we don't support those that support us? How is that? I don't understand this. Lincoln College is closing. Pat, I'm going to bring you in. Tell us what your feeling is about that, Lincoln College closing.
When you said it, I had to Google it, and I can't believe it. It's unreal that we as Black people are not seeing the essential things that are needed for our children. Our children are being affected by not having the experience of attending a college where the professors and everyone on staff looks like them and they can relate to their feelings and what they're going through. Students that go away from college, they experience homesickness.
Right.
If something happened to a loved one, sometimes they may or may not be able to get home. And the staff take on these students as if they're their own family and children. They love on them.
Right.
And it's just so sad that we no longer have the compassion and want. I remember when my son was going to high school and they had those Black college tours. I wanted so badly to send him, but I didn't have the funds.
Right.
You know, But I still did the things that needed to be done. I personally took him to, we did a turnaround trip. We went up to a junior college in, located in Sacramento College, Sacramento. That was a junior college and they had on campus, facilities. And I showed them that, well, we were close enough that I said, well, we've gotten this far. Let's drive on up to San Jose. Right. So I took them up to San Jose to just experience the college life, what it would, you know, so he'd had a choice. Unfortunately, there aren't enough wise people to share these experiences with these children.
Right.
Everybody want to be out here twerking.
Oh,
and
that's it.
Letting the generation, I blame it on us. They're letting the generation down.
Right.
How are they going to learn? They have to learn from the elder. But what type of example are we giving them? It's only a few of us, and it's not enough to save this world. And God help us.
Yeah.
I see Leonard is on. He may want to chime in on what we just talked about, the school closing.
Leonard. How do you feel? What's your feeling about Lincoln University closing? Lincoln University is part of the HBCUs and it's closing.
Give me one second.
Yeah, your connection is bad.
He has a bad connection. He said, give him 1 second. So he's probably trying to relocate his,
right.
spot. But yeah, it's really sad that it's just
sad.
2020, everything is just like the world stopped and nobody has an answer for it. Now,
the world should not have stopped. The world should not have stopped. And just like they said in the article, Lincoln University was able to withstand depression, World War II, the Spanish flu, the next flu in 1912, and then again in 1918. It was able to withstand World War II, the depression, all of these things. You mean to tell me now the college has to succumb to COVID and a lack of money? And some of the richest people in the country are not stepping up. That's a slap in the face. That is a slap in the face. You don't see Cal State LA closing, Dominguez Hills, Long Beach State. You don't see them closing. You don't see any of these colleges closing. It's only the black colleges that close and struggle. Because one, we don't support them. We're not supporting them. We're letting them do it on their own. And you see the three families that were indicted, the actors for giving money to the school. The school didn't return that money. The school didn't return that money. They kept the money. USC, they kept the money. Okay. And you see when Bill Cosby was sent to jail wrongly, Salmons had given him his money back. Are you crazy? Give him his money back for what? So you can go broke? No. 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 And we're losing. We are losing. And HBCUs don't require a lot. They don't require a lot. So why is it so difficult for us to support the HBCUs? They need our support. How dare us allow Lincoln to close?
But what were there any signs beforehand to let us know? I mean, this is 2022. It seems like that should have been at least a 5 or 10 year
They probably knew some time ago, and they did a fundraiser. They did several fundraisers. In fact, they started a GoFundMe page, which I think that's the small potatoes. But there should have been a capital campaign. They should have had a capital campaign to raise millions of dollars. And they had a GoFundMe page. They didn't need GoFundMe.
No, they needed.
That's for neighborhood stuff. They needed major fundraisers. And they needed major people to support them. It's as simple as that.
Yes.
Big people making big money should support them. Okay? They should be supported. So they're not, and now look, they're closing as of Friday. How do
we... Now, this is a big thing because, okay, now you have all these thousands of students displaced.
Right.
You have all these staff, professors, even the lady who runs the cafeteria. They're displaced, as the word, that's the word they used back in the 80s, LA Times, when they were firing people. Displaced. You are not fired. You are a displaced worker. Displaced. You're still fired. So it's the picture is bigger than just the school closing. People will be losing their property, their lifestyle of living, their cars, everything. It's a domino effect that's going to come about the school closing. It's just not, oh, my son or my daughter doesn't have a college to go to.
It is a domino effect. It is a domino effect, just like with BNC. Black News Channel. They didn't tell their people, at least based on what I read, they didn't tell their people that they were in big trouble and that they had to file bankruptcy. And now people have been displaced, lost their jobs. The company won't pay them. They have a terrible reputation now. And nobody went in to save them. They didn't want to tell anybody that they were in trouble. So they're having a difficult time regrouping. I don't know if they're going to regroup because the people that they had, they're gone. They're gone and they're salty. They're gone and they're salty. So with Lincoln apparently let people know that they were in trouble. They started a GoFundMe page. But a GoFundMe page is small. That's not what they need. They need to have a very direct strategic capital campaign. They need a capital campaign that's going to raise millions of dollars. Not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 50. And those people who were in sports and entertainment, they didn't go to the rescue of Lincoln University. Shame on them. Shame on them. This is probably the 10th time that a black company college has closed because we did nothing. Come on. Come on. This is ridiculous. And as I have said many times, the Thurgood Marshall School of Law, highly acclaimed law school, is on the campus of Texas Southern University. They are always ready and they take anybody. They'll take anybody because anybody's money will work. And just as we talked about on this broadcast before, lots of the HBCUs are now just traditional colleges because black students are not supporting the colleges. They're going to white traditional schools.
Exactly.
Because they think they can get better value at a different school, at a traditional school. Well, if you don't support the black colleges, who's going to support the black colleges? Okay, who's going to do that? So we've got a lot to do. We've got a lot to learn. We're losing a lot. We are losing a lot. And it's time that we stop this. It's time that we do more. Nobody, we talk about us doing it ourselves. Now, Where is Patrice Cullors in all of this? Where is she?
I saw on TikTok last night, there is a lawsuit going on.
Oh, yeah.
For the individuals that donated to Black Lives Matter, they've been told to file a
lawsuit
claim against fraud.
Yes.
That's what they need
to
do.
That's what she did. She defrauded those people. She defrauded those people. And Candace Owens apparently went to her house to confront her. Okay. A dangerous confrontation. That's what I read. Okay. So she obviously doesn't know that what she did to the tune of $110 million was illegal. She bought a house. She had so-called meetings down in Laguna at $26,000 a whop. She bought this, bought that, bought a house in Inglewood, house in Watts. She did all these things. Really?
But
you think those people were thinking that's what you were going to do? Okay. She's got issues. She's got issues. Okay. So we're gonna have to do something. We're going to have to do something because this is, I think it's appalling. I really do. I think it is appalling. And I want everyone to know who's listening to this broadcast. I'm challenging everybody to stop this. I'm saying it's time to stop. It is time to stop the madness. Who do you think is going to do it for us? How about nobody? And this is an opportunity for us to do it ourselves. Look at Motown. Look at Motown. All they needed back then was $60 million. The drug dealers didn't step up. Nobody stepped up. The white boys took it. The white boys took it. I was there when they were taking it. $60 million. For some of these folks, that's lunch money. That's lunch money. Come on. We're letting
this
happen.
What about the artists that never got paid for their service?
Exactly. That's right.
Exactly. Copyright infringement. A whole lot took place.
So we've got our guest on, Eric Parks, who is the president of the DOPFEC Capital. Did I get it right, Mr. Parks?
Almost. D-O-F-P-E-C.
Oh, yeah. D-O-F-P-E-C. Capital Limited Partnership. How are you?
I am marvelous. How are you?
Oh, we're hanging in. We're hanging in. What is your take on Lincoln University closing?
You know, it's interesting, and I apologize for joining the conversation late, but I actually attended an HBCU. I went to Southern University in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And one of the main things that I used to, that really used to chap my hide as far as the small or meager endowments that the HBCUs have. And I think what it mainly contributes to is once you have us who graduate, we go out into the working world, we don't necessarily are not necessarily conditioned to kind of give back, to come back to school, pad those endowments, build up some of the programs. What we do is once we get our graduation card, if you will, we go out into the world and we get caught up in the rat race of trying to survive in corporate America or whatever. And most of us, we get caught up in that struggle of just trying to survive because then you get into a nice job, even though you got your degree and things of that nature, and you're still kind of trying to fight from the ground up. You know, you're trying to make it to the next step and then the next step. And then one of the main things, what I talk about is most of us may get into nice cushion jobs that pays us a lot, but we really aren't prepared or know what to do with those salaries. Just because you make a lot of money doesn't mean that you retain a lot of money. Doesn't mean that you know how to save, invest. So when it's time for you to be charitable or philanthropic, you really don't have that much money to give. You know what I mean? But by the time you get that check, It's already gone.
Yeah.
Back in my career, I used to, you know, I have a banking background. I used to know of people, you know, they're making anywhere from upwards to $50,000 to $100,000 a week. And come Monday, they broke. Why is that? So I always tell people, it's not about how much money you make, it's what you do with the money that you make. And then for us, again, financial literacy is a problem. So again, we can graduate and we just don't have the amount of money within our budget to contribute back to our schools. And if we don't contribute back to our schools, they will start to disappear. Point blank, period.
Yeah. So do you think it's simply that they don't know how to contribute? Do you think it's that? Or do you think it's something else? Do you think it's a mindset?
Well, I think that it's a myriad of reasons, but I would say one of the main things is schools, we have to look at it. Schools are businesses, point blank period. They're businesses. And I always tell people, if you have a business that doesn't make any money, all it is an expensive charity at some point. Or at the end of the day, it's supposed to make money. And so us as students, graduates, so on and so forth, we are the clients of those schools, of those businesses. And what you're supposed to do is sow back into what you got out of it. Same thing, we condition for church that way. And we actually have problems paying our tithes. We do, but you know, and we're not even going to church as much as we used to. But the bottom line is we need to start going back to church. We need to start sowing. And we need to start going back to our alma maters and basically giving money. And then one of the other problems is putting the correct people in place who run these businesses, these institutions, so that they know how to fundraise. They know how to allocate funds for the proper type of programs. I don't like to kind of talk about sports a lot, but sports in schools is a big driving revenue stream. And, this past few years, we've had a highlight on some HBCUs. Deion Sanders is a coach, so he's bringing a lot of revenue too. I think that's Jackson State. And there's another football player. But the bottom line is we need to look at different ways to expand that business, the HBCUs, and that will, you know, start to keep us afloat and start to scale us.
Right. And with that, then I'm going to bring Leonard in here to also talk with you about this. He's one of our co-hosts. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, in fact, Leonard and Eric, please correct me if I'm wrong. I believe that we're so driven when it comes to sports. I think that we have lost the ability to distinguish what is most important. If you remember back in February during Super Bowl, everything was Super Bowl, everything. A few black players, they made a bunch of money. What are they doing with it? And I personally think that it's not that they, I think it's one, they don't know what to do with the money they make. Two, the first thing they do, they got to go to the party. They got to go to the club. They got to go buy an outrageous car. They got to go spend it on outrageous things. They have to. Mm-hmm. They have to. Saving, Starting something that creates generational wealth, especially football players. And in the message, it was other football players, Michael Vick, all of them. Where are they? Where are they when people get into real trouble? Where are our black folks who have been given so much? I remember when Shaquille O'Neal came to the Lakers. And Leonard, I'm sure you remember this. Shaquille O'Neal came here and people were hotter than fish grease because Shaquille O'Neal was making $25 million. Mm-hmm. He came here making $25 million. The ticket sales were going to go up. And the owner of the Lakers said he has to be paid. He has to be paid. He's this, he's that, he's this, he's that. He ain't missed a beat. Mm-hmm. And people still paid the money. They still paid whatever it is per ticket or season passes or whatever it is. They paid it. They paid it.
Right.
It was outrageous. Go ahead, Leonard.
Welcome, Mr. Parks, to the show. As you can see, we're really passionate. So sometimes we got to grab Yolanda, you know, and slow her down just a little bit. But we need that passion as well. What you're describing is a culture that already exists among African Americans. That's all you're doing is giving a description. There was a time when we were coming up. If, you know, your parents say you can play football, but you better keep your grades up. When those grades went down, your parents would take you out. Your parents, if there was a track meet, and I'm just talking about my personal experience, that I wanted to play or compete in, if my grades had dropped, I'm not going to be in that track meet, and let alone going outside to play if my homework, because now I got to do homework. So these are the type of things that we see. As far as the sports are concerned, here's the culture. The athletes go to the colleges that have the most TV media time. We're just lucky that Deion Sanders has taken that step because now he sees the big picture. But, you know, where was he when he had that opportunity? And it's, you know, you always want to say it's never too late. I commend him for what he's trying to do. And he has that kind of star power, excuse me, that he can pull people in. But this culture that we're existing right now is something, as I think Yolanda mentioned, or Pat might have mentioned it, I believe, that we're the ones that created this environment, and it's our fault. We need to hold ourselves accountable. So these young generation people, they only do what they see. So if they see the prior generation getting chains, nothing but partying, so on and so forth, then they assume that's what it has to be. Now, and I'm not criticizing anybody, but did anybody see Denzel Washington's house? Does he really need a house that big? And I think I heard it's worth $80 million. Who really needs a house that big and that much? And he does a lot. He does, him and his wife do a lot with the YMCA. But I also feel with that $80 million or some of the other money that he has, he could probably pick several different communities in the United States to open up YMCAs and bring other people on the board. But I can go on and on. Kiana, you have your hand up, so go ahead and speak.
Hi. Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything during this conversation, but I kind of wanted to just toss this little nugget in. And I think Black people in this country in particular are living with one foot in one universe, the other foot in the other universe, meaning we're Black in this society. We know it, and so does everybody else that views us. However, this country has a very tightly knit culture of whiteness, and it's one of those cultures where in order to succeed, you must assimilate. And we know that very well. We may not always be aware of it consciously, but it is something that we're a part of. And if you were born in this society or in a society, or if you're just a person around the world who has become, who has succumbed to the need to assimilate, then you understand what it takes to assimilate. And the assimilation process has less to do with Blackness, little to do with Blackness, everything to do with whiteness. So the more assimilated you are, the, I guess you could say, whiter, I guess, you are, because that is the structure of this society created by them. We structured it physically. They structured it psychologically. So when we have these people coming into the world and we're telling them to go to these institutions of higher education, we have to understand that one thing, that they are going into a psychological structuring. So that means they're going into whiteness. They're going to go get these white jobs. And it doesn't even matter if it's a black institution. It's going to be structured by whiteness. So when you have these celebrities who are making all of these millions and scrazillions and illions, and they're not giving back to their communities, well, that wasn't how they were formatted. That's not the structure of the white institutions. You give to the white institutions. You understand that. And it's not something that's said to you in that stream of thought. It's not said, this is whiteness, thus you must abide. It's psychologically woven into you. You're formatted that way. So your actions end up mirroring that psychological formatting. So it takes a self-aware person, a conscious person, a persistently conscious and self-aware person. It takes that single person to decide to always, I guess, swim upstream, if you will, because the entire world is coming in, has for many years come into whiteness as if that's the only thing that they have. People give up their language if it's not stolen from them already, just to come to the United States so they can speak English better. They go to schools in their own countries just so they can learn English. English is thrusted upon them, and or they somehow came into the understanding that, oh God, English is the language of money and business, and I don't want to starve, so I better go learn it. And then there's the socialization of what that even means in this country and in other countries. And so the whole world is operating in sort of a whiteness, which is, and blackness is the exact opposite of that. So we live in a white pro, black con society. And so I'm not giving any kind of no excuses to anyone.
This is a white society. This is a privileged society that does not work for us. And now that it is 22, we're realizing, as we have decades ago, that it just doesn't work for us. It hasn't before, and it isn't now. Go ahead, Eric.
Right. Yeah, I wanted to hear what Eric had to say. Go ahead, Mr. Parks.
Well, first off, I want to package the sister, Ms.
That's
Will,
right.
And put a bow on her and deliver her to the consciousness of the world.
Tell me about it.
I can't highlight enough what she said, but I will attempt to do it in two ways. One is she's describing, which you all may have already read, but Franz Fanon, Black Skin, White Mask. That's essentially what that book is talking about. That's one. I'm always, from a spiritual standpoint, I have to inject my spirituality. And I would say my favorite scripture is Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to this world, but by the renewing of your mind, be transformed by it, and you will discover God's will, God's loving and pleasing will. And essentially, sis, when you start to swim upstream and you start to become an independent thinker and you stop conforming to this socialization and the things that we are conditioned to be, the world opens up to you in a completely different way. And then you start to think in a diurnal logic way. What do I mean by that? Two things can exist and be true at the same time. The United States of America can continue, and it will continue, to be the country that it is. We can continue, and we will be black people that live within it. But you can make it work for you, and you don't have to necessarily be beholding yourself to the things that you were conditioned to. In general, this world is a caste system. Point blank period. It's a caste system. So at different parts of the world, color is there, but it's socioeconomic status that really kind of starts to put you in a different way and understanding how the game is played. What I mean by that, I apologize because I brought up sports and it kind of took us a little bit. I'm with you.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Sports is sports. I could care less because I'm beyond that, right? I'm 6'3". by 190. People used to always say, you play basketball? I was like, I used to mess with them. I'm like, basketball? What's that? I never heard of basketball before. Look at me. You get me? I was like, basketball? No. Just as when you look at my height and you look at my color, you need to look at me as a businessman because I'm about this business. Do you understand me? Don't come to me asking me if I play basketball.
Y'all would be ashamed.
I'm so much more than that.
Exactly.
But what I mean by that, and I say we're in a caste system and, you know, your socioeconomic status matters. Once you start to use that in a constructive way, and we start to bring forward others that look like us and don't even necessarily have to look like us, but we start to model a certain behavior and a certain way of thinking and a certain way of doing things in love, peace, and unity, people start to take notice. So what I'm saying is that, you know, I'm on this program, but, you know, I'm one of those people and there's a lot like me and we're coming. There's a different narrative being spun now. You don't have to rap. You don't have to play sports. You don't have to feel like you've been oppressed and depressed all your life. You can raise your level of thinking to a higher standard and comport your way at a higher standard and start to give out or start to model a new message. And what is that new message? That the world is global. It's not about the United States of America anymore. You know what I mean? I'm born and raised there. I'm not impressed. I'm sitting here in my home country, chilling in paradise. In my Black Panther utopian world, you get me? The air is good. The food is fresh with no injections in it. Yeah. You get me? I say that to say, though, we are starting to look beyond that. The world is still living under Western civilization. Western civilization came from the Greeks. The Greeks got it from the Romans. You get me? Before all that, this is what it was. When you start to understand that and you start to tap into your spirituality, you don't kind of come up and you start to point fingers at people whose skin is different. You can actually look at them and come here, you know, give them some love and show them this is how it's supposed to be. This is what it was before. I always give this one analogy. And I'll shut up. Let's say you go to a wild animal park and you're looking out at the wild animal park and you see the elephants over there. You see the giraffes over there. See the zebras over there. They all at that park together and they chilling.
Yes.
You don't see the elephant leave his herd and go over there and go jump on a giraffe or something like that. No. The whole herd go over there maybe and they be like, what's up? Let's get this watering hole together. That's how God intended this earth to be. It's not until Roman, Greek, Western civilization that starts separating us by color and start feeding us in our mind. And then there's only one shade, one hue of people that got it the most from everybody. Well, that day has changed. That day, we ain't with that no more. So we're not about to take it like that, but we're not going to give it back the way that it was given to us. We're going to regurgitate it, repackage it, and say, look, here's a brand new way of how you get along and how you bring others up and how you make others respect you for what you bring to the table culturally, socioeconomically, and spiritually.
Where's that tribe at? I want to join. Yeah, I get too. Baptized.
I want to join that troop too.
Come on down to Central America, bro. I'm waiting for you.
Right. And okay. You know what? I was just about to ask you. Now, your background is Afro-Caribbean?
I like to tell people I'm Afrilese. I'm African Belizean.
Oh, Belizean, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but I am I'm born and raised in South Central Los Angeles. You get me? I come with that kind of credo. I know what the struggle is and this and all that. But I'm the first generation of my family that immigrated to the United States, particularly Los Angeles, California. They started in about 1963, and by 69, everybody was there in LA. The whole, when I tell you everybody came, and my great grandma had 10 kids, think about it, and then they had they. So, but
excuse
my
me, I don't want to interrupt you. What part of Los, you said South Central, but back in the 60s, we either said Watts, Compton, Eaglewood. So where were you?
Yeah, I like to tell people I'm not real LA. I'm born in 74, but I'm born right on 42nd in Vermont by Manual Arts High School.
High school, okay.
All yeah.
Right. Dope.
I graduated from Crenshaw High.
Okay. Crenshaw, okay. Yeah. I worked at Crenshaw.
Oh, okay. You might recognize me. I just got a little gray now. but I say this to say is that which makes me a little bit unique, and I thank God for this, is that my family immigrated. I'm the first generation that was born there in America, but my family kept the Caribbean principle and culture intact. Mm-hmm. So as I'm growing up in South Central LA, I know that I'm a little bit different. You get me? Like in my house, you know, we did eat with rice and beans, with potato salad. We did talk like this. And, you know, when my brethren from the hood, that's American, you know, African-American, he come in my house, he's, man, what kind of black people is y'all? Your mama like, right. She sound Jamaican. I was like, my mama ain't Jamaican. I believe Jean. You hear?
Right.
And we proud of it. And we understand that we're a little bit different. But then at the same time, you know, if you from LA, it's a certain kind of pride. You know, I'm from South Central. Don't get it twisted. You know, that's what reared me, you know,
right, okay.
And influenced me in a lot of ways. But then I had that Caribbean, foundation, that African foundation, principles, culture.
That's what's so important.
That kept me grounded so I didn't kind of fall victim to the struggle. The struggle was all around me. But, you know, at the end of the day, once you kind of know what you got, you know who you are, you move a little bit different. That's about the easiest way I could put it to you.
And that's where we have made mistakes, because we thought that the struggle was not ours. Mm-hmm. We thought that we could assimilate and become one of them. Therefore, we didn't have to struggle. Mm-hmm. We could do what they did, and it made things different. How wrong we were.
Mm-hmm.
Because it didn't do anything for us. Look at where we are. Lincoln University is closed. Motown Records is gone. BNC Network is gone. And on and on and on and on. Byron Allen has had to sue a multitude of people.
Can I liken it to this? Assimilating is just because Jeffrey Dahmer lets you up from the basement, do you really want to still sit at the dinner table with
okay.
him?
Thank you.
No.
Just like that.
That's nice. I like that.
Okay.
One thing I will say, if you all don't mind, though,
get it?
That chaps my hide. In 2022, we have to get away from this thinking, and we have to get away from operating from a standpoint that we are a monolith. Because I think that's what kind of confuses us, as whether you want to call us African Americans, Americans, because some black people will say, I'm an American. I'm not even an African American. Whether you want to call us an African, whether you want to call us Caribbean, Jamaican, Trinidadian, Barbadian, it don't matter. We're not a monolith. We different. That's the main thing. And again, diurnal logic, two things can be true at the same time. There's different types of black people. There's subcultures within. When you go to the continent, you get me? Most people think that they go into a country. Some people, you go into a continent that got different nations, different cultures. They all black. They different. And when we start to think that way, we won't necessarily always point to the white dude, because it's different type of white people. You know what I mean? They ain't all just, they may be European or whatever, but they different. You see two right now killing another one. The Russians say, I don't like the Ukraine.
And that's okay. That's okay for them.
Yeah.
That is okay for them. However, when you say that we're not a monolith, yes and no. Because we are different. There's no question. We are different. You're different from Leonard. Leonard is different from Uncle Teaser. Uncle Teaser is different from Ken. We're all different. Mm-hmm. We're absolutely all different. But the one thing that we are not, that's straight across the board. Now, remember, I'm older than all of you here. Mm-hmm. And I remember when we were colored. Negro.
Mm-hmm.
And black. And now we're African American. What has changed about us?
Nothing. But what you're describing, and if I can get to the finish line in this sense, we are not a monolith. We are looked at as a monolith from others. What I'm saying is don't feed into how others look at us.
Right.
Understand that we ourselves need to understand our differences within the family. And we need to accept ourselves within the family. You got some cousins, remember the brown paper bag, sis? You know what I mean? You got a lighter skinned cousin that look at their darker skinned cousin and, you know, think they a little bit better now. What are you doing? because the person out there
that ain't right.
The same way as my cousin. I mean, as your cousin, right? So that's one of our main things. We need to understand we're not a monolith. And then we need to come together. And we need to share these ideas. And we need to lift each other up in our differences and not separate from each other in our differences.
There it is.
And then we do this. And then when we do this, you know, because when you like that, air comes through, right? Okay, you do that, ain't nothing coming through. Then we go out into the world and we make other ethnic groups. It's fine if they look at us as a monolith. Most people will look at it. You know, I see a whatever brother, I'm just going to say he white. I ain't going to say he Italian or he Russian. He white, right? They're going to look at you and say the same thing. That's okay. But I'm talking about that internal, because that's how you change. You got to change internally, renew your own mind. And so once we start to move, I was speaking in the prison today, and that was one of the main things I said. I was like, when we start to move as one and start to love each other as one, others will start to take notice and they will have to respect it, right? At the same time, understanding the social ills that has gotten us to this point. We didn't get here by ourselves. We know that. We know better now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's something that put us here. But now that we know, so when you talk about the athletes, the stars, the business people, whatever, won't you start pouring money back into, stop sending it to Harvard. Harvard got enough money.
Thank you.
Let's send that to, you know, Bethune-Cookman. Let's send that to Southern University and let's bring up, right? And it's nothing wrong with that. A university is a research institution. It's a business as well. It's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Let's do some research on our own molecular structure.
Thank you. Exactly. Exactly. That's I have a friend.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I will close it up and I will say this. Most people, when they hear you start talking like this, they'd be like, oh, you hate white people. No.
Oh, we
ain't playing that no more.
I got a whole lot of friends that are white.
We don't play that no more. You don't get to play that card no more.
I got
two
a lot
things
of white
can
friends.
Be true at the same time. I can love myself and love my blackness. And I can love white people too. Yeah, you ain't gonna play that. Yeah. And the white people that don't like me, well, I don't like you. Okay, that's fine. Let's keep it pushing. But if you show me respect, you show me love, you can get it right back. But trust me, you ain't about to oppress me. You ain't about to tell me I ain't worth something. Whatever. I'll write a check and show you how much I'm worth.
Okay.
Feel me?
I feel you. Okay. Yeah. So,
get
but
a little hot under the collar.
That's okay.
That's what
we're here for. Okay.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the things that go on in the community, and we started this because we were talking about Lincoln University. When we look at from whence we came, I look at the things that we have done thus far. And we are the ethnicity. We are the culture. We're the group who identifies with hip hop culture. Not another race on this planet has a hip hop culture or identifies with hip hop culture. That ain't a culture. Okay. That ain't an ethnicity and it's not a race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We bring these things into the fold and then we also say, well, they get it from us. Yeah, they do. Cause it's free. Cause they can.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't demand that we are the recipient of what goes on. We're the recipient of junk.
Yeah.
Okay. We are the recipient of junk. Look at all the rappers who've lost their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Almost 200 of them. Didn't even know there were that many rappers. Almost 200 of them. Mm-hmm. Okay. When was the last time you saw country music people shooting each other? You haven't. Okay. When was the last time you saw operatic people shooting each other?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't. Okay.
Well, the only reason why that happens, again, we know better now. Nothing is by surprise.
We've always known better. You got a gun and you're going to mm-hmm. go out and shoot somebody. You mean to tell me you think they don't know any better?
Well, I will. I actually, maybe we can agree to disagree. I will say, no, they don't know any better. Because when I'm in prisons talking to young men or whatever, you can kind of see a transformation happening right then where you shoot little nuggets at them. And for me, it's like ABC 123. I can't believe that this person is, you know, captivated by that. It's simple things, you might say. But what happens is what they're really shooting at is themselves. They are trying to kill what they know, what their spirit. So you have a conscience and then you have the subconscious. And so that's that hard drive, that's the below. And we act and live out of that, not even knowing or realizing. And so what that is telling them is that I hate myself. You know, I'm ugly. I'm poor. I don't have any money. So I want to kill myself. So the way how you do it is you project it and you see another brother that walk like you, that got on the same kind of clothes from you. He happened to be a blood and you catch him slipping and then you kill him and you're trying to kill yourself. That's what you're trying to do. And there's a reason why you're trying to kill yourself. And the only reason why you're trying to kill yourself is because I can teach you biblical principle. You have no idea of what your foundation is and from what you come from. He and or she, once they know their true value and their true worth, they don't offer no discounts.
Right. Okay. So you have obviously done quite a bit of work in the prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And here in LA, there's this thing about the school to prison pipeline. And based on what I see, I don't think anybody's really trying to negate or diminish or eradicate or get rid of or do something different with the school to prison pipeline. Yeah. And I know that there are 37 prisons in California, and I just read an article where they're trying to eliminate some of the prisons in California. And California has the largest number of inmates in the country, thus the largest number of prisons, because the largest number of prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the worst crime in the country is still happening. Okay. So it doesn't change anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what you see, I completely agree and respect that. Mm-hmm. I need to see. And this is personal. I need to see that there is and can be and will be a change. Because we're losing. We're losing every day.
Yeah, but it's
I don't see that we're winning every day. I see that we're losing.
And you have a right to say that. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. But knowing what I know and seeing what I've seen, I will say, it is my personal belief. It is my personal foundation on what I stand upon. A change is here. We ain't talking that change gonna come crap no more. We don't want to hear that. It's here. And how do I know it's here? Because I'm doing something about it. You get me? When you start doing, you ain't got to convince. You ain't got the hope. You ain't got the dream. You doing, right? So each day, and just a slight correction, I kind of just started working in the prisons.
Okay.
But I will tell you, my whole family background, I've been associated with prisons all my life. You know what I mean? A lot of us do. We got sons, cousins. My brother had 28 years in the feds. That's ridiculous. 28 years. And when a sibling goes to jail, when your father goes to jail, when your mother goes to jail, the family goes to jail with them.
Yes. Yes.
Do you get me? So I've been around the jail culture and the prison culture all throughout my life because that's a South Central state of mind and way of being.
Yes, it is.
And, I mean, I got so many friends. I got a cousin that's about to come home. He's been down since he was 17 and he's 43 now. Think about that. Think about that.
Really?
You get me? He did nine years in confinement.
What did he do?
Okay, so I can give you the Eric answer or the politically correct answer. Which one you want?
Eric
answer.
he violated God's law. That's the Eric
Thou
answer.
Thou shall not. Okay.
He violated God's law. We all violate God's law. When we start to understand spiritually who and what we are, we start to get back to the true essence of who we are as people, and we don't violate God's law. Man's law don't even matter. Of course he did something and he was convicted of a crime, but that's man. If you start to work backwards, the Bible says that your ending, God creates your ending first before he even start the beginning. Do you get me? So the end of your story is already complete before he even think about bringing you through. So what I would say to my little cousin or my brothers or whatever, I'm like, yo, bro, if you was spiritually moving the correct way, there's nothing that man's law could have done that would have convicted you to put you in prison. So deal with that first. But the politically correct thing is, you know, it's a murder situation. But you ain't supposed to be killing people. That's crazy. That's insane.
Insane.
You got people killing people for sport. That's absolutely crazy. And you would not do that if you loved yourself. And if you truly valued yourself, you ain't gonna take another human being's life. It's impossible.
It's right. And you know what? I had kids at Inglewood High School, and I'll never forget the day that Tukey Williams, from my family, Tukey Williams, they wanted to get him off of that gas chamber electric chair. They fight for Tukey. These kids no more knew about Tukey Williams than the man in the moon. But he was on death row and he was getting ready to go to the gas chamber. And the kids in my class were just, save Tukey. I said, for what? Mm-hmm. You want to save Tukey for what? Cause Tukey needs it. Tukey said what he did. He hurt a lot of people.
Right. Well, we're at the top of the show. I know we could continue to talk. Yes. You hear that background music. So, is there a couple of words, Eric, that you want to share with us? And let me say this before you answer. It is really refreshing to see the younger generation. I think you've made Kiana's day. All them hearts and hands and high fives she's giving you. Cause you know, she, stands not necessarily alone, but it's something that we're trying to convey to the generation is that all of us need to work collectively together and respect each other's outlook. And when there's a different outlook, we need to appreciate that outlook. But nevertheless, close it up and then we're out of here.
First of all, thank you all for having me. I would keep it short, sweet, and simple. We're all equal in this sense. Every single day, I don't care how smart you are. I don't care what color skin you have. I don't care how much money you got. Every single day, we all have something that equalizes us. That's 24 hours in a day. Do something constructive with that 24. Start to feed that mind, and that will determine your outcome. We equal in that sense, and it's free. Thoughts are free. They don't cost you nothing. Every single day, I truly believe in working on this mind to point it in a constructive way so that I can spread light. And that's what I challenge everybody to do. And once you start doing that, trust me, your life is just going to open up in a completely different world.
Right.
Absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So very much. Right. Eric, you have to come back. We haven't had enough time with you.
How much money you got?
What was that?
How much money you got? I'm joking.
Not none. About this much.
That's right. I would love to come back. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And as Leonard said, we really appreciate that you are from the younger generation, and we certainly appreciate your thought process. We really, really do. And it needs to be spread around the world. It really does. Because we're about collectivity and connectivity. Mm-hmm. So we want you to come back and be a part of the show and have this conversation, more of this conversation. So thank you so very, very, very much.
That's right. Y'all have a wonderful day, wonderful evening. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And you have been listening to Intentional Talk Radio Network. This has been Change Matters with Leonard Collins and Colette Williams. Thank you for joining us, folks. We've got another show ready for you on tomorrow. Tomorrow is In the Mix, Conversations with Colette and Corliss. Thank you for joining us. Have a good evening, everyone. Don't forget this podcast, this broadcast, you can find on all of your podcast platforms. We're there on all of the major podcast platforms. Join us again. Have a good evening. Be safe. Does anyone need to help get into their car? Maybe not. Wear your mask. You see mine? Wear your mask. Wear your mask. We'll talk to you real soon. And remember, we want to do great shows. We don't need to have another COVID special. Wear your mask. Thank you, folks. Good night. Take care.
Despite what may be going on in the world these days, when it comes to women, how they feel about the way that they look, how men think about them, what they think men expect of them, I don't think that that truly matters at the end of the day. Because the only thing that really matters is how you see yourself. How you see yourself. How you